Our gospel passage is from Matthew 25, verse 31 and following. I'm only going to do the first half of it. Jesus is talking about the end of time. And the end of time begins when the Son of Man returns, and that means that whenever Jesus comes into your life, the end of time is present. Now, when the Son of Man comes in his glory, and all the angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory, and all the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate people one from another as a shepherd separates sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right hand and the goats on his left. And then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you that are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the very beginning. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you took care of me. I was in prison, and you visited me." And then the righteous will answer him, "Lord, when was it that we saw you hungry and gave you food, or thirsty and gave you drink? And when was it that we saw you a stranger and welcomed you, or naked and gave you clothing? And when was it that we saw you sick or in prison and visited you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I tell you, just as you did it to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me." The Gospel of the Lord. I pulled this one out of the air this week because I was trying to build on some of the things that we've been talking about in the last few weeks. The problem with this passage is the setting. And the setting seems to indicate and has always been seen as at the end of time when those who are still around are somehow waiting for life and death to merge together, that God is going to come back and we're all going to be judged, gathered with all the people who are on earth. It will be judged according to the way we have lived with one another, that we have nurtured and cared for one another. And we'll be reminded, at least if you continue reading this, and we will be reminded of all the times we didn't do the things that were simply asked as a way of life following God. I'd like to take it out of that context. Just remove it from the judgment scene, because I don't believe the judgment is the judgment. Judgment, if there is a judgment, it's going on right now, so don't worry about it. By the time you get there, it's all done. All right? I really believe that. We spend too much of our lives as people guilt-ridden because of stupid stuff that we've been told. Anyway. If you take it out of context, I think it comes down to, as I put on the front of the bulletin, there's a picture on the front. The difference between identical and identifiable. And here on the front you have a picture of identical twins. Obviously they are identical, you can't tell one from the other. In my experience of identical twins, I had several of them when I was teaching in high school. And darn it, if they weren't separated and I couldn't tell one from the other, so I always got the wrong name. We had one called Lei Ping and the other one called Lei Pong. And so I'd call Pong Ping and the other one Ping Pong. So I never got it right after 4 years with these girls. But we had a good time anyway. Something that is identical is rare. You think about it, there's nothing identical to you. There's very little in the world around us that is identical except through observation. And we look around and you can say that these two flowers are identical. They may be mirrors of one another. Things in nature, some of the things that happen around the world, there's an identification take place. Identical or being identical and being identified as the same is rare. Most of us live on the other side, the identifiable. Identifiable things are those things that we somehow relate either through circumstances or emotions or intellect or social networks or something around us to which we can connect. So, for example, we can say that we belong to this church, and so we are identifiable with each other. I can identify you, you can identify me, and we can be together on a different level. So what we believe brings us together as one, but we're not the same, okay? Same thing is true if you go through the whole of our society. Groups, the Boy Scouts is a great one. You know, the Boy Scouts have hundreds of thousands of Boy Scouts and now Girl Scout, Boy Scouts, whatever that's going to become. They can all identify with the club, but there's no identification that is identical. Politics, we identify with one party or the other, or independently, we identify ourselves, and therefore when somebody speaks from one perspective, we can identify ourselves with that, or we can identify with the other, or whatever third or fourth or fifth party comes through. Those identifiable things keep us connected. That's how we are understanding our environment. Same thing is true when you get into things like marriage, you know, married people. You know when you fill out all the forms? Now when you fill out every time you go to the doctor, you got to check in married, you know, spouse, all the same information over and over again. Every 6 months it has to be updated. I don't know why they have to do that, but it's a pain. Especially when you got to write down all your medications. You got to pull out the paper, you know. But as people, we have many ways of identifying our role in society. I'm part of clergy, so I can identify with anybody that's a clergy person. Lawyers can do it with lawyers, doctors with doctors, engineers with engineers, postal people with postal people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We know all that. But that's being identifiable. We can discuss what it means for me and how I can relate to that person because of what we share together. But in that sharing, we are not identical, okay? Why that's so important, I think, is this. You go back to the time of Jesus, or back to the time when this gospel was written, this would be around year 80. In Jesus' day, he never really got too far away from Jerusalem. He went up north a little bit and he went south a little bit, but he was all pretty much in one area, probably about the size of Rhode Island was his life. That's his world. And in that Rhode Island state, how many people do you figure were there? Not millions. Most of it was desert, so there were little pockets here and there. When Jesus is talking about this, it's interesting that he uses phrases like, when I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. That's the most basic tenet of Judaism is hospitality. To welcome the stranger into your home, to feed the stranger, that's very Jewish. Now, the Jews were a small part of this state of Rhode Island piece. So he's speaking to a very small group of people. When he talks about prisoners, what is his experience of prisoners? Well, they're under Roman occupation. And during the Roman occupation, there were an awful lot of people thrown into prison for sedition, for violating whatever policy the emperor or the, whatever they called him, Pontius Pilate was the, whatever his title, precept Persia. prefect. He was the prefect of the area. And so you do those things, you end up in prison. So he had those prisoners, religious prisoners, who fought against having to bow down to the idols of Rome. The political prisoners were numbered, many numbers, because there were all kinds of insurrections against the rule of the government at the time. When Jesus talks about being naked, a lot of people were naked in those days, not out of necessity, but out of the circumstances of their lives. In some instances, there were people who lived with very little clothing, which is very dangerous in the desert, you can well imagine. Go sit on the beach for an hour and multiply the intensity, and you know what it feels like. So he's talking about very specific situations that he sees around him. And I was wondering, as often I do, if Jesus were here today, what would he say to us in these kind of categories? Right, we're the sheep, we're the good guys. We won't talk about the goats, we'll talk about us. What would he be saying to the good guys? Well, he said to them, "When I was hungry, you gave me food." See, our world is so complicated. Now, here in Bethlehem, I can look at that whole list and say, you know, the people of Bethlehem have done a marvelous job of living out this gospel. Maybe not because they know the gospel, but they have a sense of belonging. We identify ourselves as people of Bethlehem. And when there's tragedy, we're all there. When there's problems, we're there. When something happens to an individual, we're there. There's a lot of support, a lot of verbal communication, an awful great, great news people out there. The news through Bethlehem goes like wildfires in California. It's wonderful. So everybody knows what's happening. But there's always a response. And there's organized responses like our food bank, the fuel bank, and the community funds, and the scholarship program, and all the other things that we have going. So we're covered. I'm not talking now about Bethlehem. However, our world is big. And the world is much more complex than in the time of Jesus. So I wonder if Jesus would be saying something about, you know, there are people who are hungry, not in this town because we take care of that to the best of our ability, but there are people in this town, in this state, who trade off getting their medication or paying their rent rather than eating. Or there are people, children especially in this country, who go to bed every night, hungry. Or there are elderly people who don't have the wherewithal to care for themselves and don't have certainly the financial support that we would think they should have, who go hungry. Being naked. My gosh, there are people, kids, for example, right now trying to go to school, who hopefully will be able to buy some clothes without taxes, paying taxes this week, in order to get to school and have the things that they need. 5,000 school bags or backpacks packed with all the stuff that they need for school were collected and donated out in the city of New Haven. It's one city. There are kids today who are getting ready for school who have nothing to bring it, and when they get there, are using textbooks that are so dated that it doesn't include the last 50 years of American culture. There are kids who will never have an opportunity to learn what so many of our children do because they have the money to buy games, et cetera, to develop keyboard skills that are going to be essential for their future. Clothing goes beyond just dress. when you were sick. Gosh, you think of the hospitals overrun with more illness and disease. And so many people in our area are, we had the whole opioid crisis down on the green just this week. Right, wrong, fault, good, bad people. Over 100 people OD'd because two guys were making a profit for themselves. There are people in our country, here in this town, people in our country, who are psychologically prisoners to their own selves. People who can't move beyond some of the issues, the traumas of their youth. Some who are emotionally so tied to circumstances that they live through that they can't see any hope. People who've been struggling for years with addictions and not making any progress. Our teenagers, upcoming group of people whose suicide rate is the highest it's ever been. People who are suffering because there's nobody there to listen to them. You get my meaning. We don't have to go through the whole playbook, but I wonder, and I wonder what Jesus meant and would mean if he stood here today and looked at the world that you and I live in, the world that we touch, the world that we breathe, the atmosphere that colors our perception, the prejudices, the judgments, the things that keep us from seeing a bigger picture. I wonder if he would say the same thing. And if he does, I think the challenge is really great, a huge challenge. Because he doesn't say, I want you to be identical to me. He doesn't say, I want you to be identical to all those people. He says, I want you to know that God identifies with all those people. And what you do to them, you do to me. Now, I thought that's a hell of a message for Sunday. But it's there. You know, the challenge of the gospel. Somebody makes the gospel so simple. I heard the other day a preacher on the radio talking about how God's greatest blessing is that we have security in our homes and we have wealth enough that we can give some away to help somebody else. And I wanted to stop him and ask him, what gospel are you reading? I said last week, and I think in the prayer section this week here, I usually put a thought for us to pray for the week. I pray that we may be a deposit of the values that we've grown up with, that we've held on to, and that seems to have given us a grounding in reality that includes kindness, respect, and gentleness, and service, and all the things that we've come to know as being Christian. Because as the world tumbles through, I don't know what to call it, whatever it's stumbling through, somewhere at the end, I hope there is a place like here in the town of Bethlehem where people will find what they need to have hope in the future. Because we're gradually losing touch with all the things that really matter. It's just a thought. Now, do you see, after I prepared this on Monday, why I couldn't find an appropriate cartoon. I'll look this week. I'll see if I can find one. But anyway, amen.